Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Juan Manuel Benitez of New York One Noticias, sitting in for Brian Lehrer this morning. The vote is in, and the rent freeze is over. And whether you think the 1.25% increase for one-year leases or 2% increases for two-year leases are too much or too little probably depends, as always, on whether you're a landlord, a tenant, or maybe someone paying market rates who's a little jealous of your rent-stabilized neighbors. The endless quest for affordable housing goes on, and joining me to talk about that housing news, as well as a new proposal to make the city's rent subsidy programs more effective, is Political New York's Laura Namias. Laura, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. Let's start with the vote on rent increases. From what I saw tweeted, the meeting started late, which led to dances and chants or how low can you go by the tenants there. But after 2 years of no increase on one-year leases, was it inevitable that there would be an increase this year?
It's not inevitable ever that there's an increase. Technically, the increases are supposed to be based on whether or not landlords are experiencing increase in their overall costs. And for the past 2 years, landlords had reported either very little increase in their maintenance costs, fuel costs for maintaining apartments, or a decrease 1 year. Except this year, landlords said that their costs increased 6%, a little more than 6%, and they're forecasting the cost to increase about 4.5% in 2017. And so the calculation to increase the rents is based on that. Mm-hmm. So not inevitable, but definitely would have been more difficult for them not to increase rents this year given landlords' increase in costs.
Mm-hmm. And listeners, we want to know what you think about these rent increases, either if you're a tenant or a landlord. Is it too little? Is it too much? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And I was asking Laura whether that increase was inevitable or not, because we know that this is an election year,
yes,
right? And someone like Mayor Bill de Blasio, who's running for re-election, he might not be that happy this year, knowing that the Rent Guidelines Board recommended an increase in rents.
That's true. I think that he would have preferred, from a political standpoint, to be able to say that there had been 3 years of no rent increases for rent-stabilized apartments, although he does at various times claim that he has control over the board, and then sometimes he says that their decisions are not his and they're independent of him. But in terms of political problems that it could cause, I don't really think it's going to be that much of a problem for him. His Republican challengers are definitely not as likely to advocate for no rent increases. Mm-hmm. One of his Republican challengers, Paul Massey, is a real estate executive, former real estate executive himself. And there's not been much talk on his left flank from his Democratic challengers that about this as an issue. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, even though he's not going to get another year of no increases, that this is going to hurt him politically.
What is the Rent Guidelines Board? For those listeners who don't know who these people are, that every year around this time, they make this decision. Who are they, these members of the board, and how many of them are appointed by the mayor and controlled by the mayor?
100%.
100%.
Unlike the MTA. There are 9 members of the Rent Guidelines Board. They're all appointed by the mayor.
Even the landlords' representatives?
Yes.
Okay.
There are 2 members that represent tenant interests, 2 who represent the landlords, and the rest who are represented the rest represent the general public.
And can you tell us how many people are going to be affected by this? Because we're only talking about rent-stabilized
exactly.
Apartments. How many are they in the city? How complicated, how hard it is to get into one of those?
There are more than 850,000 rent-stabilized apartments in New York City. It's obviously just a small slice of the housing stock, a significant slice, but it's not everybody. It doesn't affect everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's close to a million tenants in New York City that might mm-hmm. be affected. And year after year, there are fewer and fewer apartments that will fall into this category. Is that correct?
Yes.
Because they basically phase out under that law that makes them stabilized those rents. And yesterday was also the day that a new proposal from council member Steve Levin and former speaker and former mayoral candidate Kristen Quinn to expand rent subsidies in the Living in Communities or LINC program. What is the LINC program? Because it has several tiers, correct?
Right. Well, so the LINC program is one of a plethora of rental assistance programs put in place by Mayor de Blasio. The city, when de Blasio came into office, the city had been without a rental assistance program for years since former Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor Andrew Cuomo allowed a program known as Advantage to lapse. Almost everyone who, who observes the homeless crisis in New York City points to the lapse of Advantage as one of the significant drivers of the growth in the city's homeless population, just for context. But LINC is a subsidy program that helps pay a portion of people's rent if they've been in shelter in order to get them out of shelter and hopefully eventually achieve some kind of permanent housing or the ability to pay for their mm-hmm. own housing.
Let's hear from some callers. We have Bernie in East Village. Bernie, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I live in the East Village, and I have been to the rent guidelines hearings in the past, and one of the frequent comments tenants make at those hearings is that they ask landlords to open their books. So landlords claim that they have an increase in costs, but they're not required to document that. Is that right? I feel very angry about that. My rent keeps going up. I'm going to be retiring soon, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to afford it.
The landlords are supposed to document their costs, actually, and the Rent Guidelines Board website, if you go onto it, you can look at the reports that they have prepared that outline what some of the reasons are. It's an amalgam of things that go into the determination of what the increase in what is causing the increase in cost, but it's not a totally opaque mm-hmm. process.
So, Bernie, would you be signing a one-year or a two-year lease?
I usually go for a two-year lease mm-hmm. just because I was always told that was the wise thing to do, although last year it was not wise because I ended up paying an increase when it was a zero for the one-year lease. So, mm-hmm.
So do you think the 2% that was decided yesterday is too much?
Well, like I said, you know, it's like the woman you have on your show said that it's
Laura Namias. She's a political New York reporter.
Yeah. It's an opaque process, and it should not be. It should be very, very real and open to the public, and it's not. And I feel that Real Estate Board of New York has much too much power. There's too many people that are becoming homeless in the city, in my neighborhood, on the streets, and I think it's a little bit, it's time for change, really. Mayor de Blasio should listen.
It's he's speaking to a very real problem that's affecting all New Yorkers. I actually was just looking at some data yesterday that showed that between 2005 and 2015, median rents in New York City increased 18.3%, and by contrast, the median wages in New York City increased 6.6%.
Isn't that something? So I haven't had a raise in years.
Right. Well, right. So people are feeling more squeezed. Maybe they're making more money than they were 10 years ago, but it's not going as far as it used to.
Thank you so much, Bernie. Thank you. And we're going to take another phone call from Michael. He's in Harlem. Michael in Harlem, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you. Good morning. So here in Harlem, we have a median income of $36,000, and the rents have increased over the past 10 years by 90%. Mm-hmm. We're told that last winter was the warmest winter on record. How can these landlords deserve a rent increase? I wrote a piece a year ago in the Times called The End of Black Harlem. This is contributing to the gentrification of the entire city, and it's immoral, just immoral.
What do you, heating the only reason why landlords wanna have an increase, the heating costs?
No, as I said before, it's a combination of factors, including insurance, maintenance costs, but heating is definitely a component of it, and the fluctuations in the price of fuel. But it sounds like you're calling for the callers calling for maybe a new way of determining rent increases that relies less on input from the real estate industry and landlords.
Thank you, Michael. And we're going to go with Jordan. He's in Greenpoint. Jordan, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
So what's your question, Jordan? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to comment. I'm a real estate agent here in North Brooklyn, and I recently overheard a real estate professional comment that rent stabilization is property owners subsidizing lower rents on behalf of renters. And I think that this is a common misconception which feeds into the idea that property owners are somehow sacrificing or taking a hit by owning and operating rent-stabilized properties. I just wanted to point out, if a building was built recently and is rent-stabilized, in that case, the owner of the building opted into rent stabilization in exchange for a tax break, a tax abatement program. It was their choice. For older buildings, most rent-stabilized buildings that are older, the owners have owned them for decades and decades. They paid maybe $40,000, $150,000 for them, and those buildings are now worth, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 times what they initially paid for it, and their mortgages are long paid. And then finally, I just wanted to point out that if someone buys a rent-stabilized building, the price they pay for it is pegged to the income. So what they are buying is exactly what they are getting. If you have a rent-stabilized building that brings in $100,000 a year, you pay much, much less for it than a building that brings in $200,000 a year. And it's a very simple case of you get what you pay for. So I just think that's extremely disingenuous for property owners to cry about rent-stabilized rents when, in fact, it's a program that works very much in their favor, whether or not they've owned the building for a while or they got into the building, they bought it for a lower price because of it, or because they received a tax abatement in exchange for rent stabilization.
So, Jordan, basically your point is that the owners of these apartments and buildings, they're making money even if the increases in rent are close to zero or like 2%, like this year for two-year leases.
Of course they are. And it's simply because they've either owned the building for decades and decades, they have no mortgage on it, their income by far outweighs their expenses on the building, or they are paying little to no taxes because they opted into rent stabilization for a tax abatement. And also, when that tax abatement expires, the building becomes deregulated. It is no longer rent stabilized. Finally, there's lots of landlords that love to complain about their rent stabilized buildings that they bought 5-10 years ago, but they paid for that building based on the income that it brought in. They mm-hmm. knew it was rent stabilized. They knew exactly what they were buying. So to complain about rent stabilization increases at this point, if you've bought a rent stabilized building recently, it's like buying a Volkswagen, paying for mm-hmm. a Volkswagen, and then going to the government and complaining that it's not a Ferrari.
Thank you so much, Jordan.
All right. Thank you.
So it might be interesting to note at this point that last year the largest landlord group in the city, the Rent Stabilization Association, sued over the rent freeze, and they were overruled by a judge who actually determined that the Rent Guidelines Board could use affordability as a criteria in making their decision about whether or not to freeze the rent. So it is possible, or I think would have been possible, for the Rent Guidelines Board to go for a freeze again this year. It may have been very unpopular with some real estate interests in the city, but they could arguably have done it given the ruling in mm-hmm. that case last year.
Let's hear from Sam in Brooklyn. Sam, good morning. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. The bottom line is, used to
and
be
lady.
A landlord, and I attend all these meetings, and the goal is to get everybody out except for millionaires one day. The maximum money that they can get is to use any bullying tactic. They'll use the court and the judges, which are in the pockets anyway, to get tenants out. And they'll make the excuse of noises coming from somewhere to get you evicted. So we need a revolution that will physically occupy these buildings. That's the only way we can resolve this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sam. We need a revolution. Do you think that's going to happen anytime soon, Laura?
I don't know if I could accurately prognosticate about the chances for revolution, mm-hmm. but it's safe to say that this is one of, if not the most frustrating issue, maybe aside from education, for New Yorkers right now, is the cost of living here and how it has skyrocketed over the past 10, 15, 20 mm-hmm. years.
And let's go back to talking to the LINK program that you were right. mentioning earlier. Is this like a program that is like being tried maybe to be a substitute to programs like the Advantage
yes.
program that you talked about that many people in government blamed its lapse, its lapse in the homelessness crisis that the city is seeing right now?
Yes. So as I was saying before, the de Blasio administration developed LINK and a series of other programs, each that are with different eligibility considerations and rules and who they apply to when the mayor came into office. And it's sort of been a work in progress. They've tweaked the program and added new tiers to the LINK program as they've gone along, based on what they're seeing as trends in the city's homeless population, demographics who have different needs. That's because of, in large part, because of the Homeless Services Commissioner, Steve Banks, who is very, very familiar with the issues surrounding homelessness. But what the city has seen and saw initially was that even though this is essentially like free money for a landlord, it's a voucher, it's as good as money, it's guaranteed by the city government, that a lot of landlords weren't wanting to take these vouchers. So
why do you think is that?
Well, they say, and the city says, that they are skittish about taking a voucher from somebody in the event that something happens like what happened with Advantage, where the program lapses and then you have to kick out your tenants en masse. And as it is, a bunch of the different subsidy programs, and there are several, have time limits on them. This is one of the things that former City Council Speaker Christine Quinn and Council Member Steve Levin are arguing needs to be changed going forward, and is the subject of legislation that they were talking about yesterday, to eliminate time limits on these subsidies. They say that it increases landlords' discomfort with renting apartments to people who mm-hmm. are trying to get out of shelter, and that has a cascading bottleneck effect. People can't get out of shelter. Their stays are increasing, and the longer they stay, the more problems they have, and the harder it is to get out, essentially.
And it's also complicated because some tiers of this program are controlled by the city, and some others are controlled by the city and the state. How does that work, and where is that money coming from?
Right. So before the de Blasio administration developed its new programs, there were already some programs that were jointly funded by the city and the state. Link 1 and Link 2 are jointly funded by the city and the state. But in order to have more flexibility for who they could give subsidies to, the city developed some programs that are entirely city-funded. A program called City FEPS, SEPS, and several of the other link tiers. There are six different link tiers. And the city says that that's actually going to change. There was a lawsuit that was settled recently, advocates suing the state over the amount of the state FEPS program. Because they said that it didn't pay enough. And the city says that now, because of that determination and that lawsuit, that they can essentially consolidate some of these alphabet soup of programs and that it'll be smoother and easier and less confusing for everybody.
And homelessness and affordability, well, we know that there are huge challenges.
Yes.
And there are still almost 60,000 New Yorkers in the city's shelters. A lot of homeless New Yorkers in the streets, and we see them even more and more right now in the summer because of the weather. Is that number going up or down?
It's held pretty steady for a couple of years now. I think as of last week, there were 58,290 people living in city shelters. 22,000 of them, roughly, were children. And it's remained that high. The city says that they've used these subsidy programs to help 13,500 people exit shelter since they began, but that the number of people coming in and the number of people living in shelter has remained around that 58,000 to 60,000 mark for years now. It's and hence calls for finding new ways to increase the effectiveness of the city's efforts to move people out of shelter.
And do you think that's going to be a problem for Mayor de Blasio this year for his reelection, knowing that in 2013, homelessness was a huge issue that he campaigned on, and we see now that the number of homeless people in the city is up from the levels of 2013?
Like with the Rent Guidelines Board decision, I think that the political ramifications of this for Mayor de Blasio are at this point de minimis, in part because he doesn't have a challenger who has come forward with a solution or a plan that they say would be better, substantive ideas for what they would do differently. So even though there may be problems with the de Blasio administration's approach and the numbers of homeless people have not diminished significantly, unless somebody can show him up on this issue, he doesn't seem likely to face any problems in his election because of this.
And we're going to take a last call. Raul in Manhattan. Raul, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much. I've been listening. And like I said, everyone has their own proper perspective through their own experience and situation. I'm a first-generation immigrant, son of immigrants, and a landlord, a building owner. And one thing that people fail to kind of constantly realize is that the rent, the cost of living in this city is so expensive because of the taxes. And the taxes keep going up every year. I have a building in Washington Heights that in 2010, the taxes were $110,000. Now, 7 years later, they're $260,000. Mm-hmm. And those rents, those property taxes, are reflected through the rents, which unfortunately people have to pay. If you want lower rents or you want to stop rents going up, give a property tax freeze. Tell the city council to stop giving themselves $40,000 without referendum salary increases. All these things that keep going up, all these services, are a reflection of property taxes. Property taxes are paid for by rents. So for me, I understand the plight. I lived here when it used to be rather cheap in the 80s in New York City. But it's become more expensive because now the city's worth something, lining their little coffers for their programs, for their salaries, for their things, their perspectives, and that is reflected in the property taxes which landlords have to pay.
Thank you.
Not all of us get these rent abatements. A lot of us have owned properties in Upper Manhattan, the Bronx, where the rents don't reflect the property taxes. And so the mortgages are not paid off, and that's still a struggle. And more so, perdóname, as a first-generation minority, where there's not many of us as landlords. So I've seen both sides of the coin, and luckily we've been able to aspire. But people have to be realistic. You want to stay and live in New York City, like my father taught me, you got to buy. Because if you're renting your whole life, you're right. You're not going to be able to cover the increasing expenses that keep rising up, especially on a pension as you get older, sadly to say.
Thank you, Raul, for that perspective. And thank you, Laura Namias. She is a political New York reporter. Thank you so much for your help understanding what all these news mean today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.